Welcome to the Women's Wellness Psychiatry Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Anna Glazer, MD, a reproductive and integrative psychiatrist here to help you make sense of the complex world of women's mental health. If your goal is to improve your emotional well-being, find fulfillment, and feel like your best self, you're in the right place. Welcome, my listener friends. In this episode, I want to focus on anxiety as a very common but often missed symptom of postpartum depression. In my experience, I probably have more women reporting anxiety when they come to see me than depression. But there's a lot more discussion of the term postpartum depression than anxiety out there, both in the media and in research. And what can end up happening is the assumption that to have postpartum depression, you must be feeling sad. That means if you aren't feeling sad, you may think that you don't have postpartum depression and continue struggling during the postpartum period. This episode today will make sure that that doesn't happen, whether you're postpartum yourself or have friends, loved ones, or clients who are. Let's start by looking at anxiety itself. What is it and how does it feel? I like to think about it from two perspectives, the impact on the mind and the impact on the body. The mind can often be affected by anxiety, and that leads to racing thoughts. It can be ruminations, thoughts that circle and spiral, catastrophic thinking, and oftentimes distraction and lack of focus. In the body, anxiety can often be an elevation in your heart rate, muscle tension, clenching of your teeth, chest tightness, neck and shoulder tension, low energy. It can be those butterflies in the stomach or an upset stomach. It can be a headache or general body aches and pains. And it's really important to note the impact on a woman's functioning. It can impact postpartum on the bonding and relationship to the baby. It can lead to conflict with a partner and irritability. It can mean isolation from friends and withdrawing from loved ones, and it can absolutely make it harder to sleep. And we already know how precious sleep is during the postpartum period. In fact, the number one word I hear that leads me to think about anxiety in the context of postpartum depression is the word overwhelm. Think yourself about whether or not you've told yourself anytime recently, I'm so overwhelmed, I feel overwhelmed. That overwhelm experience can often be a sign of anxiety and a sign of an anxious depression. Let's talk more about how to recognize postpartum depression, what it is and what it isn't, now that we've talked about kind of this primary cardinal symptom of anxiety. One thing to note is postpartum depression is somewhat different than postpartum anxiety and definitely different than the baby blues. You may have heard of the baby blues. The baby blues is this experience that the vast majority, more than 3/4 of women have postpartum, which is really related to a combination of the really sharp drop in hormones postpartum with the sleep deprivation that comes with the process of labor and delivery and postpartum. And what it looks like is tearfulness, some irritability, maybe that sense of overwhelm. It usually appears by day 3. It usually peaks around day 7, and it usually begins to taper off by the end of the 2nd week postpartum. And so, like I said, that's really, really common. Postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression, sometimes lumped together under the umbrella term PMAD, which is postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, is also unfortunately quite common. Postpartum depression is thought to occur in at least 15 to 20% of women. And when you think about the number of women who are delivering at any given day in this country, that's a really huge number. So that's why it's so important to know the signs and symptoms of postpartum depression so that from that place, you can then go and seek treatment and help. Postpartum anxiety, when separate from depression, can sometimes look like episodes of panic. It can look like obsessional thoughts or intrusive thoughts. And there are some cases where it's very much just anxiety in that shape. For many women, though, Anxiety is really, like I said, a symptom of postpartum depression. So we should also look at some of the other symptoms of postpartum depression so you can better understand that. After anxiety, some other common experiences that women have that are consistent with postpartum depression, which I'll now begin calling PPD just to make it easier, is difficulty with sleep. Now, this one can sometimes be hard to recognize because we think about, well, postpartum, of course, a woman is supposed to, be having trouble with sleep, the baby's waking her up, all of those kinds of things. But what it really means is even when there isn't something else external in the environment that's making it hard to sleep, the woman is having a hard time sleeping. You might be having those kinds of anxious, ruminating, racing thoughts that are keeping you awake and making it hard to go back to sleep after you've fed the baby overnight. A lot of those kinds of what-if thoughts, that's a really common one. Another potential symptom is a change in appetite. So when you think about it, if you happen to be breastfeeding, you're probably needing more nutritional intake rather than less. But for some women with postpartum depression, their appetite can really fall off. Then there's really a lot of psychological symptoms, a lot of feelings of guilt or worthlessness, or a lot of inadequacy of motherhood. So a lot of those questions of, am I a good mother? How do I be a good mother? Or what if I'm not a good mother? There can also be a loss of pleasure. So things that you really used to enjoy, you no longer do. And it can really lead to difficulty bonding and attaching with the baby. You don't feel that connection. And you might also begin withdrawing from your partner or other loved ones. And in certain cases, there can even be thoughts about death or self-harm. Those are all the different kinds of symptoms of postpartum depression. And unfortunately, the clinical world hasn't done a great job of defining both perinatal and postpartum depression. Clinicians use this particular diagnostic manual, the DSM, to evaluate and diagnose all kinds of mental health conditions. But it tends to be updated very slowly. The most recent one was updated well over 5 years ago now. And it isn't a great descriptor of the experience that a lot of women have in the real world. I think that there's sort of that academic definition of postpartum depression, and then there's the real world definition. And in the real world, things don't always fit according to those perfectly packaged definitions that we have in the manual. So I think it's important to recognize that a woman, you might have five women who all look very, very different. And they might all be struggling with postpartum depression. One really helpful screening tool for those of you who are listening who might be clinicians out there is called the EPDS, the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, which the reason I really like it is because it's really simple to use, it's 10 short questions, and at least three of those questions focus on anxiety, which a lot of our other screening questionnaires don't actually include when we're screening for depression. And like I said, anxiety is oftentimes the number one symptom for postpartum depression. So now that we understand the symptoms, another question that I often get is, what causes postpartum depression? What is the reason that I might be struggling with postpartum depression? And the answer is not simple. We don't have a great explanation because it really is so many different factors. There's the hormonal changes. Your estrogen and progesterone levels drop really precipitously at delivery, and that's a significant change in the body. And then there's a lot of physiological changes that come postpartum. There's also the sleep deprivation, and sleep disruption is something that definitely impacts mood, as I'm sure we are all aware at many points in our lives, even if we think about, back to school, if we ever kind of pulled an all-nighter or had the stress of finals, to work stress and other kinds of things that led us to have some sleep deprivation, it impacts us. It impacts our mood. It might make us more anxious or irritable. And then there's also the activation of potentially some vulnerabilities that you might have if there's perhaps a genetic predisposition to depression and postpartum depression in your family. Maybe it's something that affected your mother or your grandmother. And so you put all of those factors together, the hormones, the physiological changes, the sleep, the genetics, and you have the perfect soup for the cause of postpartum depression. The other thing that can be helpful to look at and to think about is who's at risk and how do you know if you're potentially at risk? And then once you recognize whether or not you have one or two or multiple risk factors, you might be able to intervene and get treatment before you begin to develop a significant case of postpartum depression. You can intervene early. So it's important to look at who's at risk. Certainly, if someone has a prior history of depression that's unrelated to pregnancy, it actually increases their risk of postpartum depression. Additionally, if you were in some kind of mental health treatment and you stopped it abruptly because you learned that you were pregnant, that might increase your risk of postpartum depression. I mentioned the family history piece already. And then social support's a really big thing. When a woman doesn't necessarily have the appropriate social support, it increases her risk of postpartum depression. And I like to mention this fact because sometimes it means that we might be able to intervene and create that social support, whether that is virtual or whether that's in person. Virtual support, there's a lot of different options these days that have opened up across the country, and that makes it in some ways a little bit easier to find that virtual support. At the same time, in-person support has gone down dramatically, so that certainly makes things harder. I'm going to once again mention a resource I've mentioned in previous episodes, which is Postpartum Support International, which is a wealth of resources, both local and national, to help you find the connection that you need postpartum for the support. I think oftentimes, what happens in this country is that in the United States, if you're listening in the US, is that there's families that are really spread far apart. You might have one family member living on the East Coast, another in the South, and the rest of the family happens to be on the West Coast. It's really hard to create that village that it often takes to help a woman postpartum and to raise children. And so it's really important to think about the social support system and what does that look like and how do you shore that up to decrease the risk of PPD. There's also a couple of things to think about during labor and delivery and immediately postpartum that can increase the risk, the chance of developing PPD. One is complications during the labor and delivery process, as well as postpartum pain. It's really important to manage pain postpartum, and that doesn't necessarily mean taking pain medication. It might mean, for example, working with a pelvic floor physical therapist. It might mean taking some hypnobirthing classes that can help with pain management. It could mean a number of different things, but it's really important to make sure that pain is well managed postpartum because when you're in pain, that increases the risk of depression. And it works in reverse as well, where depression can actually increase your experience of pain. I think that's why a lot of times you might see advertisements and other educational awareness campaigns about how painful depression is. It can really feel like a lot of physical pain in your body. And the last piece I want to mention is breastfeeding challenges. While breastfeeding is very natural, that doesn't mean that it's easy. And I'm going to definitely talk more about breastfeeding in future podcast episodes, but I do want to just mention here the fact that breastfeeding challenges can increase the risk of postpartum depression. So now we have a sense of what postpartum depression is, what postpartum depression isn't, how to recognize it, and how to know whether or not you might be at higher risk. With this information, you're well equipped to be able to connect with other experts and get the support that you need to decrease your risk and to reach out for help and treatment if you believe that you might be struggling with postpartum depression. Remember, anxiety can be the primary symptom.
Thanks for joining me for this week's episode. As you know, my goal is to share with you the most helpful information that moves you towards emotional well-being. If you have suggestions or questions, I'd love to hear those. And I also always appreciate a rating that will help others find this valuable content. I'm looking forward to connecting with you again next week. Please note that while I am a clinical doctor, this podcast is not a substitute for, nor should be taken as medical advice. No specific health advice is being given on this podcast, and no physician-client relationship is created by you listening to this podcast. All information provided on this podcast is for informational purposes only.